Good afternoon. My name's Carol Reese, and I'm an alcoholic. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. My sobriety date is February 13th, 1990. I have a sponsor. She has a sponsor. My home group is Temple Square. We meet on Saturday morning at 10 o'clock. And if you're in town on a Saturday, please come and join us. We'd love to have you. My first drink I had around the age of 14. It was nothing special. I didn't continue to drink from then. Just palling around with some friends. We had a few drinks, had some good times, and I was okay with that. I didn't instantly turn to alcohol every day. That's not the way that it worked for me. But I did have some fun in my teenage years with it. About 17 years old, I started drinking in a bar. But again, it was really nothing to excess. And I had met my first husband in that bar. He was working there, and it worked out real well. He was a bouncer there, and I liked to go there and drink and have a good time. We got married about a year later. I really didn't know him all that well before we were married. And I was pregnant with my first son. You know, thank goodness that I was able to put down the alcohol and not to drink during those pregnancies. But then again, alcohol wasn't a problem in my life then. I had a second pregnancy, my second son, and again, the same thing. You see, I could go out to dinner, and I could have a drink or two, and go home and be okay with it. It just wasn't an issue. As things changed in my life, after about, I'd say my son was about 2.5 years old, my husband decided that he would like to go into a business, a bar business, with a buddy of his, and they did so. And, you know, he would ask me to come down to the bar to spend some time with him. And, you know, to tell you the truth, I really didn't like bars. I didn't like the things that went on in bars. Wasn't really raised up in bars. Went to them a few times, but that was about the extent of it. So I did start going to the bar a little bit with my husband, you know, drinking and partying, and needless to say that my drinking increased a lot. When you own the bar, nobody tells you at 2:30 that it's time to go home. And we'd sit at that bar till 5, 6, 7, 8 o'clock in the morning and drink. Thank God I had a girl that lived across the street from me that she would babysit for me at night, and I would go home and, you know, ask her to stay over a little while longer so that I could go to bed and pass out and get some sleep. And she was pretty good about doing that. Excuse me. A few years later, my husband and I separated. And, you know, I didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do with the feelings, the emotions that was going through me. I was a failure as a wife. I just didn't know what to do, and he moved out of the home, and I stayed in the home with the kids, and, you know, he supported us fully for quite some time, and I started going out, though. I mean, it never really stopped from when we were in the bar, you know. I just kind of continued to do it a little more often. I started going to other bars and drinking, and, you know, as it progressed in me, it seemed like I went from one or two nights out a week to seven nights a week, you know, or five nights a week. And, you know, during the separation, after a while, it got to be a little bit for my husband to take care of both households. So he had asked me, you know, he says, do you think you could get a job? And so I did that. And a friend of mine started, we started a cleaning service. And we did that only after we got done working, we'd stop out at the bar for a couple of drinks, you know, and she would leave and go home, you know, to her family and take care of her daughter and her husband, and I would stay at the bar. You know, I would call the babysitter and say I'd be home shortly, and that never happened. I would end up sometimes at that bar till 2 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, I had already been gone since 7 o'clock that morning, and you know, the drinking just progressed. It just progressed, and what happened was I had come home a few times and the electric would be turned off or my gas had been shut off because I was drinking the money up and not paying the bills. And I would call my mom up and ask her if she could help me out and, you know, give me, you know, some money to, if I could borrow the money to have the utilities put back on. And, you know, loving those two grandchildren the way that she did, she would help me out. And my husband called me up one day and he says, Carol, we need to talk. And so he came over that morning and he says, look, you know, we really have fallen behind on house payments. He says, I give you money to pay these bills and I don't know what you do, but we're going to lose our home. And there's no way that I can come up with that kind of money to make these payments. And he says, I don't know what you do with the money. And then in disgust, he said, I have a pretty good idea of what you do with the money. So we put the house up on the market, and we sold the home fairly quick. And I asked my husband if the boys could come and live with him until I could get on my feet financially. And he said, of course. And so he took the boys, and they moved out with him. And I got myself an apartment. And, I moved over there, and I was drinking. My drinking had increased a whole lot by then. And this gal that I was working with cleaning these homes, occasionally she would find me passed out upstairs in one of their beds. And I was supposed to be up there working and cleaning, and she'd be downstairs doing her thing, and she'd come upstairs and find me passed out, you know. And, you know, she had a little talk, and she said, Carol, I have to let you go. She says, you're not responsible anymore. You don't show up. You smell of alcohol, and I just can't, you know, we can't run a business like this. So she said, I'm going to take the clients that I want, and you can do what you need to do. She says, but we're done. So I talked to my sister-in-law and asked her if she could help me get a job where she was employed, and she said yes. So she got me hired in there, and, you know, now I don't have the kids, so I don't have the responsibility to come home to them every night. So I would go to work, and I'd go to the bar, and that's what I did, you know. And after the bar closed, I'd take a bunch of people back to my apartment that I didn't know, and we'd party there all night. And what happened was I was evicted out of that apartment after a short period of time. And I got off work one day, and I went down to one of the bars that I drank at and gathered up a couple of guys and a couple of pickup trucks, and they moved me into my stuff over to a friend's garage. And I didn't have any place to go. So I asked my sister-in-law if I could live with her. And she said, well, I have a place in my basement. She said, there's a couch down there that you could sleep on. And that's where I went. I took what I needed at that time, and I moved into her basement. Work wasn't going real well either. I was calling off a lot, or I was going in, you know, they would talk about somebody smelling of alcohol, you know, and I'd be standing there, you know, and I'd say, well, surely it isn't me. I went home and took a shower and changed my clothes and brushed my teeth. You know, how could they smell alcohol? And I didn't know that alcohol come through the pores, you know, back then. I didn't know anything about the disease of alcoholism, and furthermore, I didn't know they were talking about me. So what happened, I had visiting any time with my kids. On the weekends, I could take them out to dinner through the night, and, you know, it just, I didn't do those things. I would call them up and I would say, I'll be there to pick you up on such and such a day and such a time. And I wouldn't show up, you know, or I'd stop at the bar on a Friday. I was supposed to have them for the weekend. And I didn't get there, you know. It would be like Tuesday sometimes before I came to and realized where I was and what day it was. And I would call and give them another lame excuse, you know, as to why I didn't show up to have them for the weekend. I did have them one weekend in August, and they were getting ready to go back to school. And I had taken them back to their dad's house, and I had to go into work. And when I got to work, I worked that day and talked to my husband and talked to my kids that evening at bedtime and said goodnight to them. I got off work and went home back to my sister-in-law's house, and But I ended up going out to the bar, you know, for a while, and I partied and drank. And the only difference was that night, instead of going out and staying out, I went back to my sister-in-law's house. And I got a phone call a little later in the middle of the night that my husband had been in an accident on his motorcycle, and that if I wanted to come down to the hospital, that I could do so. And, you know, I got up and I tried to, you know, brush my teeth and get the alcohol smell off of my breath and went down to the hospital. And, you know, the family was all there and some of our friends were there. And after a little while, you know, my sister-in-law come over to me and she said, you know, we really have enough to deal with here. She says, and you reek of alcohol. She said, why don't you go home? And if we need you, we'll call you. And so that's what I did. I asked if I could go pick up my kids, and, you know, they told me, absolutely not. You have been drinking, and you are not putting those kids in a car. We'll have somebody bring the kids over to you. And that's what they did. My brother-in-law went and picked up my boys, and I got the kids, and we went to bed for a little while, and I got a call on that Saturday morning that I could come back down to the hospital. And my husband wasn't doing very well, and so I got the kids together, and we went back down to the hospital. And I went upstairs to the intensive care unit, and they were allowing us to go in and see him. And when I went into his room, you know, I mean, he was hooked up to all kinds of machines and everything. And I stood beside his bed, you know, and I told him that, you know, to not worry about those kids, that it would be okay and that I would take good care of those kids. And when I left his room, he died a few minutes later from that from the injuries from that accident. And he was 36 years old, and our boys were 8 and 12 at the time, so I had to go downstairs and tell the kids what had happened, you know, and needless to say, they were very upset, and, you know, I just didn't know what to do for them. And after a while, we had left and gone back to my mother-in-law's house for a while, and I started to drink. I knew that she kept wine coolers in a refrigerator, and that's exactly what I did, as I went in there and I started, you know, drinking up those wine coolers. And they were trying to make arrangements for a funeral, you know. I don't remember a whole lot about that funeral or the next couple, 3 days. You know, and I was at that funeral home, and, you know, I was drinking in between calling hours. And, you know, and I'm not proud of that. I am not proud of that at all. That's where I was at that time in my life. And after that, I didn't know what I was going to do. I have these two kids. How am I going to take care of them? I don't even have a place for them to live. I'm living in a basement. And so I talked with my mother-in-law and asked her if we could stay with her for a while until I got on my feet financially. And she said, but sure, you know, not a problem. And so we all moved into my mother-in-law's house. And I went ahead and started looking for a place to live, so that I could get these kids back and get some structure in their life. And that's what I did. I found an apartment, and I moved the kids. We all got settled in. However, my drinking, I was at a point there where I was not a daily drinker, but I was real close to it. And my sons, especially my youngest one, you know, he would say things to me like, please don't go out tonight, Mom. You know, if you're drinking too much and you get in an accident and something happens to you, there'll be no one to take care of, you know, my brother and me, you know. And he was absolutely right. So for a while, I would stop at the liquor stores and get fifths of rum. I was a rum drinker, and that's what I would do, is I would go home and drink rum. If I had to stay in the house, I wasn't going to stay there by myself. And after a few months passed, I started leaving the kids to go out. You know, I left my 12-year-old son there with his brother, and I started heading back to the bars. I was off and running again, as we say. And for a period of time, it was a few hours here and a few hours there, and then, you know, that grew. And sometimes I would come home at 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, you know, just in time to get them up for school. And I had been up drinking one night, and I had called off work. It was about 6 in the morning, and I went upstairs to get the kids up for school, made sure they were up, and I went into my room and passed out. My son came in a little while later and asked for lunch money for Heather. And when I told him to go ahead and get the money out of my purse, I didn't know this at the time, but he had got into the wrong compartment in my purse. And he had found some drugs in there. And he went off to school. He didn't say anything to me about it. And he got his little brother ready for school, and they left that day on the bus. And when he got to school, you know, he was dying, I'm sure, inside to tell somebody about what had happened that day and what he had found in his mom's purse and didn't know what to do. And so he went and he told his little buddy. And when his little buddy got home that night, he told his dad. Now, I knew his little buddy and I knew his dad. This man would come and take my kids out for ice cream on occasion. My kids had spent the night at their house. Their son had spent the night at my house a few times. And this man was a police officer in the community in which I lived. And like I said, we knew each other a little bit. And so this police officer called my brother-in-law, who at the time was also a police officer in another community, and asked him if he would come out and talk to me. And my brother-in-law agreed to do that. And when he came over and he, you know, he says, "Carol, you know, I know you drink a little bit here and there." He says, "Obviously, I don't know to what degree." He said, "But the drugs," he said, "what is going on with you?" And I says, "You know what? I drink a little bit to kind of take the edge off. I don't have a problem with the booze." I said, "And as far as that other stuff, I was holding that for somebody. It didn't even belong to me. And I was going to give it back to him, you know." And he didn't believe me. And so what happened was, he says, "You know, I know you've been under a lot of stress." And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "You've got these two kids. You work a full-time job. You lost your husband." He says, "You've got had a lot going on." And I said, "Yeah." He goes, "What I think you need is some time for yourself." And I said, "You know, that's exactly what I need, is just some time for myself to relax." He says, "Why don't I come and pick up the kids this weekend, and you can have some time for you?" And I said, "That would be great." He returned on Friday to pick up the boys and said he would see me on Sunday. So we all said goodbye, and you know, I thought about what he had said. He was my brother-in-law that came over to pick up the kids, the police officer. He was very much involved in the DARE program. So he was familiar with Alcoholics Anonymous and the programs that were out there available if you had a problem and you wanted to go. And so he talked to me a little bit about it, but I told him that I didn't have a problem and I didn't need Alcoholics Anonymous and I didn't need anything else, that I would be okay. And he says, "Well, if you change your mind," he says, "I'll even take you to a meeting. I'll go with you." And I said, "Well, thank you very much, but, you know, I don't need that." So he left, and I thought about what he had said for a few minutes, and you know, I did flip through the phone book and I looked up Alcoholics Anonymous, and, you know, I convinced myself there that I did not have a problem and that they are the ones that, you know, if they would just leave me alone and get off my back, that I would be okay. So I went upstairs and got cleaned up and went out that weekend. And I came home on Sunday morning. There was a message there from my mother-in-law. Asked me to call her when I got in. So I called her and she said, "Could you please come over?" She said, "I'd like to talk to you." And I said, "Sure, no problem." So I got cleaned up and went over to her house. And she started asking me questions like, "Why do you drink?" And I said, "Well, I like to have a drink every now and again just to take the edge off, you know." And she says, "Well, how much do you drink?" And I said, "It's just a couple of drinks, you know, and it's not every day." And she said, "Do you think you have a problem?" And I said, "Absolutely not." I said, "I have a couple of drinks to relax." I said, it's not a problem in my life." Shortly after that, my brother-in-law came back to her house. They walked in, however, my sons were not with them. And when I asked where my sons were, my brother-in-law told me that they wanted to go back out and see that police officer again and talk to him. And the police officer did what he had to do, and he called Children's Services. And Children's Services had taken my kids away from me, and they were in the children's home. And he said, "There'll be a lady calling you in a few minutes to confirm that." And she did, and she told me that my kids would be well taken care of, to not worry, and that there would be a lady to call me up the next morning and talk with me. She could reach me. And I told her I would just stay at my mother-in-law's house and they could contact me there. I was really upset. I was really furious. I was really mad. And I thought, how dare you, you know? Sunday night, the bars I drank at were closed. But my thinking was, my friend has a bar in his basement. He owned a bar, but he also had a bar in his house. I left my mother-in-law's house that Sunday evening, and I went over to his home. And I started drinking and drinking and drinking. And I drank most of that night away. And I just couldn't get drunk. I went back to my mother-in-law's house, and eventually I passed out. I got a little bit of sleep, and this lady from Children's Services did call me the next morning. She met me out at my apartment, and when she started telling me things, you know, that my sons were saying, like they were afraid to get in a car with me because they never knew when I was drinking or not. I didn't go to work, or if I did, I didn't come home from work, you know, and they just loved me and cared about me, and they wanted me to get help and said that until I got some help that they did not want to come back home. So to make a long story short, I was court-ordered into treatment. I agreed to go. They told me I only had to stay for 3 days, and I was in detox for 3 days, and I tell you, I don't ever want to forget that. I was in so much physical pain, so much emotional pain. I was throwing up. I was in the bathroom curled up in a ball in so much pain. And about 3 days later, they sent me over to the other side of this facility. And I thought, well, okay, I did my 3 days. I'm out of here. I don't have a problem. They can see that. And I'm going to go home. Well, there was a gal over there that was in, I didn't know that it was a rehabilitation site. You know, I was in detox for 3 days. I went over to rehab, and she said, you know, you probably ought to go talk to somebody because this is a 28-day program. And I said, I'm not staying anywhere for 28 days. I said, I want to go home. I'm ready to go home. And she says, well, you need to find your counselor, and you need to talk to her. And she says, and if you want to go, then I'm sure, you know, you could go. And that's exactly what I did. I really went and I found who this lady was. She was going to be my counselor. And I went in to her office that day and we were talking. And I basically sat down there and I told this lady my story. And we just shared, you know. And thank God that the woman didn't laugh at me. Thank God she didn't tell me what a god-awful person I was. She just listened. And she said, you know, you're free to go. She says, but I would like for you to go back to your room and think about why you're really here. She said, because I have no idea. And then if you want to go, she said, you're welcome to leave. So I went back to my room and I really thought about why I was really there. And I was willing to go to any lengths to get my kids back. That much I can tell you. I had lost everything that I had. It's my kids. And if you're a parent, you know what I'm saying. So I was willing to do whatever I had to do to get, you know, to get my boys back. And I completed the 28-day program there. I was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous there. They had some meetings that went on in the hospital. And I, you were told to go to those meetings, and I did. What I did here in treatment was if you are going to stay sober, you need to go to Alcoholics Anonymous. You need to get a sponsor, you need to get a home group, and you need to find out how to stay sober. Well, I thought I could do that for a little bit, and then when I get my kids back, you guys, thank you very much, but I got to go. And what happened was when I left treatment, they held my job for me, too. They welcomed me back. I did go back to work right away, and I started going to AA meetings, and everybody was real friendly to me and, you know, real helpful. My first home group was a women's home group out at this facility as to which I was in, and I was there for about 3.5 years, and that's where I met my first sponsor. She was a wonderful woman, and she taught me a lot. You know, she was very patient with me and very kind to me in a loving way. And she showed me how to be sober, you know, and she showed me a lot of other things. She showed me how to live, you know, and she got me in the book. She got me busy. And we started reading the book, you know. She taught me how to dress like a lady, you know. She taught me how to talk. She says, you've got a lot of changing to do. And she says, really, you need to change everything except your name. And slowly but surely, she taught me how to do that. And she passed away a few years ago. But, you know, I still hear her voice in my head. And I hear the things and the words that she says to me, you know, and she was a wonderful sponsor. She was exactly what I needed at the time, and God put her in my life for a reason. It was a wonderful group of women out there at that meeting, and they really helped me out a lot, as though all the other meetings did. However, I wanted to get my kids back, and I wanted to move. I did complete my aftercare out there also, and in the process, I bought a home. And I thought, when I do get my kids back, I'll have some place and we can all have a nice fresh start, you know? So I was able to purchase a home. I was fairly new in sobriety. And I hadn't got my kids back yet, but it took a little while, you know? They were watching me and that was okay because I was doing what I had to do, you know? And I came to Alcoholics Anonymous and I learned how not to drink. And I would hear stories from the podium, you know, and the one that baffled me the most was, if you don't take the first drink, you can't get drunk. And I thought, you poor people, I've never gotten drunk on one drink. I'm okay. I can take the one drink, you know, and I'm okay with that. It took me a long time to get that, but I got it. And so I started going to AA meetings. I went to meetings over by my home, and I met a whole new group of people, and that was wonderful, you know. I went to a lot of meetings. I went to meetings every day, and it worked. It's what I needed. It's what my sponsor told me to do. And like I said, I was willing to go to any lengths to get my sons back. And excuse me. About the end of August is when I got the custody of my kids back, and I got a letter from the Children's Services Board, and I still have that letter at home today saying that they closed my case. You know, and that was one of the happiest days of my life. And my kids come back to live with me, and, you know, I'd like to tell you that everything was just, you know, peachy king, but, you know, it wasn't. I mean, we had to get to know each other again, and I had to learn to stop trying to buy their love. Because that's what I was doing. Out of guilt and shame, I tried to buy their love, and that wasn't working, and it wasn't going to work. It got real expensive, I want to tell you real quick. However, like I said, my job was still there for me, so I was working, got this new home, I'm going to meetings, I have the boys back. I had got up this Saturday morning, and I didn't have to work until the afternoon, so I thought I would go to the sunrise meeting. And I woke up, and there was this dogwood tree outside my window, and I thought how beautiful, though, you know, that it was, the white flowers. And it was just a real nice morning. I got up, I'm at this meeting, and there's a gentleman up there speaking. And I tell you, I had a peace and a calm come over me that morning at that meeting that was something I had never felt before. And from that day to today, I have been staying sober for myself. And I was about 4 months sober at that period of time in my life. And so that's when I got serious about Alcoholics Anonymous. And I wanted to give this an honest, with all the best that I could, you know, opportunity. And that's what I did. You know, I got, I started to get busy a little bit, you know, doing coffee and, I chaired the meetings and welcomed, you know, did the welcome thing and working with girls, you know, just talking one-on-one, you know, that's exactly what I did. And the ladies and the men, you know, taught me how to do that. And they taught me how to, you know, behave in an AA meeting. I didn't know how to do that either. But they taught me an awful lot of things, and I'll be forever grateful to them for that. I had a good foundation. I had good beginnings. And, you know, that's what I try to pass on today. So in getting my kids back and, you know, everything is going along and they're back in school, they had to go to new schools, but that was okay, you know. We were able to stay there until they graduated high school this time, so there was no moving around and no different, you know, schools in their life again. And what happened was my oldest son had decided that he had a problem with alcohol. And he had come to some meetings with me, and he stood up one night in a meeting and, introduced himself. He had had a period of time of sobriety, and he went back out. And I want to tell you, I can help alcoholics all day long, and I can carry the message. But when it come to my son, the pain was so great inside, my heart hurt. You know, it just, it weighed heavy on me. And I knew that he was the one that had to get sober if he was to get sober again for himself. However, my physical, emotionally, and spiritual health was going down the tubes. And I knew that I had to do something, but I didn't know what to do. My husband and I had been at a conference. We not had been. We were going to a conference. We got up that morning and decided what meetings we were going to go to, and I went my way and he went his, and I decided to go to an Al-Anon meeting that morning, and I'm so glad that I did. I listened to this lady tell her story, just like I'm doing today, and I sat in that room, and I tell you, I never identified or felt so many different feelings as I did sitting in that room that morning, and I went up and spoke to her after she got done giving her talk, and told her how much she had given, you know, me, the hope that she had given me, you know. But it was hard because it's my son and he's out there drinking, and I don't know, you know, whether he's in a gutter or whether he's okay or isn't, and I'm dreading that knock on the door that, you know, something bad had happened, you know, and I'm not eating and I'm not sleeping and I'm getting so physically sick. And after that meeting, when I came back home from that conference is when I decided to go to Al-Anon, because I tell you, I was back in the grips of alcoholism, folks, and I never picked up a drink, and it was making me really, really sick. And I started going to Al-Anon, and I've been doing going to Al-Anon meetings for about 8 years as well, and it helped me so much to get myself under control, you know, and to realize that there is nothing that I can do for my son or any other alcoholic except pray for them. If they reach out for help to me, to be there for them, to guide them and give them some direction. And it helped me out so much. You have no idea, unless you've been there. And, you know, fortunately today he's sober again, but like I said, whether he is or is not, I don't have to go crazy and make myself sick over it. And, you know, it just, the relationship that I have with my sons today is just wonderful. You know, my son gave me a big old hug this morning and told me he loved me and said good luck today, you know, and both of them did, you know, and that was what a neat feeling, you know, from two kids that wouldn't even look at me at one time in their lives love me that much today, you know, and they have forgiven me, and I just have a wonderful relationship with them today. And that is because of Alcoholics Anonymous, because if it wasn't for Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not be where I'm at today. And so like I said, I just got busy doing what was suggested. My sponsor got me into the steps. Once I made the decision and became willing, you got to have the willingness to be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, is when I started to get a little bit better. My sponsor took me through the steps. We did them one at a time in the order that they are. And she was a godsend to me, you know. And that's what I pass on today. I met my husband, Tom, here in the fall of 1990. We had some mutual friends outside of the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous that had let Tom know that I was a member of this fellowship also. And so he looked me up. Tom and I became friends for a long time, about 5 years, I guess. And then we got together in 1996, and we've been together ever since. And, you know, Tom's thing and I do mine, and we go to meetings together, but, you know, we also go to other meetings. We go to conferences. We go to maybe half a dozen or so conferences a year, and, you know, that's just awesome. You know, we have such a wonderful relationship, you know, and I sponsor some gals today. And what a blessing, you know, what a blessing. I absolutely love the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the fellowship that you guys are just wonderful. I've never met such kind, loving people anywhere in my life. And so between the going to meetings, praying on a daily basis, helping another alcoholic, and working with the gals that I sponsor, you know, my life is full today. I have a wonderful life today. I also have, excuse me. And like I said, I have good family today too. And I have a relationship with my mother-in-law today, the lady that took me into treatment and dropped me off. And, you know, we talk on the phone. I mean, she loves me. She's there for me. I could call her up anytime and let her know that, you know, I'm okay. And it's a wonderful relationship. You know, my brother-in-law, you know, I just seen him not too long ago. And, you know, it's nice to, I'm so grateful for what they did, what they had to do for the welfare of my children. You know, I absolutely have no animosity. I mean, there's nothing there. And working through the steps changed that for me, you know, and forgiving myself was probably the hardest thing that I had to do, but I was finally able to do that. You know, I carry no guilt, no shame with me today, you know, and my life is pretty simple. My life is real good today. You know, I have a job where I was not qualified for this job. I went to do one thing, and now they have me doing other things, and they've kept me. And I didn't have any qualifications, but my supervisor told me the reason that you're here is because of your attitude, Carol. You have a good attitude, and we need you here. We want you here. You know, and I've been there for about 4 years, and I absolutely love it, you know. They're a great group of people to work with, you know. There is not a part in my life that isn't a good part today. I just have a full, wonderful life. Founders Day, I live for this. I really and truly do. And we, you know, Tom and I, we have friends that come over and come up and stay with us every year. And it's wonderful. Get up in the morning and have coffee with my friends before we all head out on our day. I've been fortunate enough to make it to a couple of internationals. And what a blessing. I'm not kidding you. It's just an absolute blessing. I'm still in awe over the internationals and today, you know, what an honor today to be here and to share my experience, strength, and hope with you. And it's just been a wonderful, wonderful weekend so far. And I look forward to the rest of it. I think I'm about done. I would like to thank Tom for asking me and the Founders Day Committee. It is truly an honor to be here today, and I want to thank all of you for coming and being here today. I love you. God bless.